Today's show is a conversation with McCallum Fulkerson, a young man who is a senior in high school. We talk with McCallum as part of our continuing conversations with young people about hope and hopelessness. If you are a non-Christian listener, or even a certain kind of Christian who has a switch in their brain that goes to off whenever you hear a certain kind of Christian evangelical language about God and Jesus, if you are that person, I encourage you to stay open. Contrary to stereotypes and prejudices in certain corners of American society, there are intelligent evangelicals, and McCallum is one of them. More pointedly, for the What in God's Name project, is the question, how shall we live together? While that question is not directly posed in the following conversation, it's present all the time. How shall we, in this incredibly plural society, how shall we live together as one nation at peace? Shana and I will be considering that question and reacting to this conversation next week. Meanwhile, please enjoy, as I did, this beautifully honest and provocative conversation with McCallum. We're talking today with McCallum Fulkerson. As part of our continuing series on resisting emptiness and choosing hope, in a second, McCallum will be able to introduce himself. But I just wanted to remind our listening community, and actually, McCallum, tell you, I think you already know this, but these conversations with young adults, including yourself, have grown out of an initial conversation we had with a professor at a New Hampshire State College, where she shared her observations that the young people in her class presented this past fall. So she was just talking about this past fall, presented with low energy, a sense of not being excited about life, just generally down. And so that struck her, like it was different than other times that she's been in front of young people. So in that conversation, we realized we wanted to talk to young people themselves and just hear what life is like for you. And we also know, just to set a little bit more of the context, there's so many studies about anxiety and depression in people your age. So it's really important to have these conversations, to just hear, again, firsthand from people like you. But McCallum, before we get there, say a little bit about where you're from and where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm here in Charlottesville, Virginia. Was originally born in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm a senior in high school. I'm looking to go to Boyce College at Southern Seminary next year. They have a 5-year MDiv program, which I am super excited about. Yeah.
So you're in high school at the moment?
Yes, sir.
And are you at a public high school in Charlottesville?
No, sir. I'm at the Covenant School, which is a private, non-denominational Christian school.
How long have you been at that school?
I've been there since sixth grade. That was when we moved from Nashville, Tennessee, because my dad was taking a job at UVA.
That's very interesting. So tell us about how you're experiencing life at the moment. If you, McCallum, take an inner inventory, you look into yourself, into your soul, into your emotional life, checking in with yourself that way, how are you doing, you personally, with a sense of purpose and direction? It sounds like you have a sense of purpose and direction in terms of plans after high school. But tell us more in your own words.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, I would definitely say I'm very excited about life. I'm really excited to see what God has in store for me. I can't honestly say that it's always been that way. It's definitely been a rocky road, definitely a roller coaster. But thankfully now, because I feel like I've settled in on understanding where God is calling me to. I can't be more excited than I am right now, because it's just such an amazing opportunity that I never thought that I would necessarily have. I feel super fulfilled with a sense of joy. I'm happy to wake up every morning because I see that there are many amazing things to come in that day.
Thank you for that. Thank you for acknowledging, in particular, you said rocky road and roller coaster, and that sounds authentic and genuine, and I would love to hear if you'd be willing to say a little bit more about how and when you experienced rocky road and roller coaster.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've grown up in a Christian family. I've been very blessed with the parents that have been placed in my life. I've been blessed with the family that I'm in. But I can definitely say that even though I'd always been raised in church from the time that I was born, maybe my mom got a week to recover, but you know, that next Sunday, I was right there in the pew with them. That's always been a very big part of my life, which has both its perks, but then also its challenges, because it can be very easy, particularly for kids that have been raised in a strong Christian family. It's very easy to get lulled into the idea of that you have your faith simply because your parents have your faith. And I would definitely say that in the time to where I really wasn't owning my faith, to where it was something that I did either on Sundays or something that I just did on Wednesday nights at youth group, I can definitely say that that was where I was most challenged, to where I was most down on myself. Also with my family, with my sister, who is very academically gifted, and to where I'm very excited for her and the opportunities that she has. Given the accomplishments that she had academically, I would definitely say that there was a certain pressure on me not to live in that same shadow, to where teachers will be like, oh, we had your sister. We absolutely loved having her in class. But to where, in a sense, being the younger brother, I always had the pressure to perform in that. And whenever I wouldn't get that grade that I wanted to, I would feel down on myself. Another thing that I found was, particularly in sports, I would definitely say that while my sister is definitely, she was a great swimmer, I definitely had a unique interest and dedication to the sport, to where I really had some lofty goals that I wanted to achieve. I had places that I wanted to be. I really wanted to swim in college. And I would say that I placed a lot of my identity in my achievements, both academically, but then also athletically. And then also just the culture of high school, to where kids are always getting into trouble, making mistakes and doing things that they ought not to do, whether it be for legal reasons or just because it's not beneficial to the soul. I also found myself being drawn into those sorts of things, definitely veering off the path to where I should have been in order to live an honoring to God life. But that's where I found myself in despair, because as we all know, none of these things in the world are ultimately going to give us fulfillment that is going to be lasting. I think Tim Keller really framed it well in Reason for God, when he started talking about identity, to where anything that we root our identity in, unless it's God, it's always going to be shifting. It's never going to be steadfast and sturdy. And that's where I found my self-worth and my identity, given the nature of the things that I was placing my identity in. It was so volatile. And naturally, when things were going well, I was happier. At least I thought that I was happy. And then when things were not going as well, it was a struggle to even want to get out of bed that morning, questioning why, what's the point? But then things changed when I really started to find my way as far as to where I was actually taking on my relationship with Christ personally, to where I was actually actively engaged in that, and as opposed to just doing all the right things, it was a personal relationship that was far deeper than anything that I had ever tried to experience or had experienced before, and I can definitely say that it is the most fulfilling thing that has ever happened in my life. It's the happiest I've ever been, and it's the most driven that I've ever been in my life.
That was so rich. I've been scribbling furiously notes on what you've said. And so I've got 5 different bullet points that I want to ask you about. But let me start. So I say that, and then I say thank you. Thank you for that, for your honesty. Let me work towards the last thing you said back up. When did you read Tim Keller?
I read Tim Keller in 10th grade. It was the assigned reading for the class. My teacher, Mr. John Colmes, who, Brandon, you sat in on his class that was specifically on missions. But that was the assigned reading for the class, and we just worked our way through that book, but then also the Book of John throughout the entire year.
At the very beginning, so I'm jumping around on the different things you said, but I wanted to respond to the note I put down to myself, and I don't think this is an exact quote of what you said, but what I heard was that a time of rocky road was, you mentioned being raised in a Christian family, and so there's this time, my understanding of faith development. As a child, you accept what your parents have put out for you because you're a child. And then there comes this time of adolescence where you have to separate, and then there's questioning. So my question to you is really about the timing of when you experienced this moment where you didn't use the word struggle, but I'll say struggling to make faith your own. And again, these are all my words, but this is what I've heard. So correct me if I'm using the wrong language. My question, I'm getting there. When did this happen in your life? Am I right? Was this kind of early adolescence time, early high school, late junior high?
Yeah. So I'd say that the time to where it became both head knowledge, but then also was something that I actually believed in my heart, to where it was something that I was actually passionate about, to where that fire was actually there for the Lord. I would say really that it's happened relatively recently. I'd say probably second semester of junior year. Obviously, dealing with depression and suicidal thoughts is not something that you want to deal with, but I can honestly say that through it, that's been one of the biggest acts of God that I've ever seen in my life, and I'm so thankful for it.
I guess I just need to follow up on what you just said, because again, you've been very courageous to say that you were in depression to the degree that suicidal mm-hmm. thoughts were a part of mm-hmm. your depression. And can you say a little bit more about what that is like? Is it possible to describe what inhabiting that kind of depressive space feels like or looks like? Can you say more about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think towards the beginning, how you've framed this entire discussion, I think the feeling of being lost, feeling no hope, just having no real idea of where to go. Obviously, it's a difficult state to describe, but I would say that just being without hope, without having any desire for life, because everything just seems, as you said, meaningless.
Yeah. Thank you for putting more words to it. And the other thing I appreciate is, I think, this is a comment, so you can respond to a comment, but I think in some people's minds, religion can be used as a way to defend ourselves from life. I'm not saying that quite right. Religion can be used as a shield to avoid the darker places. I guess that's how I want to say it. And your account, your testimony right now what I'm hearing is that's not so. Like you're telling a story of the authentic human journey, to my mind, and that religion wasn't used as a way to avoid that. That's a comment. Do you have anything, a response to that at all?
Well, I guess my primary response to that would be, as I've sort of thought about it, and even with my thinking for senior thesis and whatnot, that's a whole different discussion. But in just how we as humans live our lives, and I think that the First Westminster Catechism really sums this up. The chief end of man is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. And so I think that whenever we aren't seeking after that, like religion aside, whenever we aren't seeking that to truly align ourselves to the reality of this world that God has created, that we were designed to glorify Him and to seek after Him, I think that whenever we don't do that, that's really where we find out that life is meaningless, because if we're not doing what we've been designed to do, then what are we doing then? What purpose do we have on this earth, as opposed to just 75 years on this earth not seeking after God? Christians have a unique understanding that there's way more than just what we do on this earth, that no matter what worldly success that we have, that we ultimately, the goal was to glorify God and to seek after Him, to not be conformed to the world and to seek to be conformed, to look more like Him, ultimately submitting to His authority. And I wouldn't necessarily say that religion, speaking in broad terms, would be the best way to do that, because even within the evangelical world, we have people who are seeking to do religion and not actually follow after God and whatnot, to where they can also have that lost sense of what reality actually looks like. I would classify myself to have been in that category as well, to have been doing religion but not actually seeking after Christ.
Yeah, that's what I was after. That's what I was trying to say, and you've said it very well. And it's not, you're familiar more with the evangelical world, but it happens in every expression of Christianity that I know of, and it's biblical as well, in the sense of what I hear you say is seeking after the living God, the living presence, the active presence of God. That is alive and life-giving. What's easy to do, I think, is find an image of God that it's idol. Can be idol worship. We think we've got God, but once you think you've got it, that's not God you're talking about anymore. So you said it well, and you helped me to think about it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. Like idolatry, that is exactly it. That is exactly the issue there.
You mentioned, as you were talking about your story, your observations of your peers in high school, and so I'd be interested to hear a little bit more about that. You've shared your story with hope and hopelessness and energy and meaninglessness and where you find it and how that has played out in your life so far. How are you observing that in your peers?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that sticks out to me, and I know some people may say this in sort of a sarcastic or joking manner, but yet still out of the heart, the mouth speaks, to where people will make jokes about, oh, like, we don't know that anything is real. Like, how can we know anything, like, at all? Which, obviously, like, for some people that may be meant in a joking manner, but I think for a lot of people especially, particularly in our increasingly secular world, I think that the fact that we struggle to know anything, to where people have said no to God, said no to what the Bible reveals to us about God, to where they don't necessarily know what can be true because science can only go so far. Reason can only go so far without that help from the Bible, divine revelation, something that is supernatural and outside of ourselves. And I definitely think that as kids grow up, trying to find a place in this world, trying to find their footing, they're going to try on a lot of different hats before either they find something and have that relationship with God, or they just don't, and it's a struggle. And I think that the increased awareness about mental health and depression, I think that that's a really big indicator. And people like to chalk it up to social media and whatnot and just the technology. But I think that with that specifically, that just shows the increasing problem with how people don't look to God for their identity, how they look to their peers for their identity, how they look to however many likes that they get or whatever they're doing in their lives, whether it be grades or academics. And then when people ultimately find that this isn't fulfilling, and while it may give you a short high, it's not anything that lasts forever, they tend to turn to things, whether it be sex, drugs, drinking, doing things that they shouldn't be doing, all just trying to find the approval of someone, particularly their peers. But ultimately, we as Christians know that that's not something that can actually last.
Brandon, this might be a good spot for you.
Great. I think that one of the questions I want to ask McCallum is a tricky one, because obviously I know he's evangelical and you know, because I do research with him. But one of the things that strikes me as really interesting that I want to hear him sort of talk a little bit about is that, and this is something you and I've talked about too, Chris, which is that I think for long stretches of American history, most of the nation gets its sort of identity, its morals, its Christian ethic from Protestant Christianity. But over the last, say, 20, 25 years, we've seen a pretty dramatic change in the religious landscape of the United States, such that about one in four people don't have that sort of Christian religious ethic. And one of the things that strikes me that is interesting about this conversation is that McCallum is telling us this beautiful observation that one of the places he gets purpose and meaning, at least as far as I'm hearing it, is from his Christian identity. I guess my question to you is, what do you think that people who don't have that Christian identity, where can they get a sense of hopefulness from? I'll just leave the question at exactly that.
Well, that's definitely a difficult question to tackle there.
I ask the tough questions.
To be honest, I really could not tell you. Recently, I've been reading a little bit of C.S. Lewis. I believe the title was Man or Rabbit, to where he was talking about the question of, can you live a good moral life without being a Christian? And to be honest, I think that he gets to a really good conclusion, to where it's really impossible to do that, to have a true sense of lasting hope. And obviously this is where faith comes into play. But because we as humans were designed to know things, to seek knowledge, in the absence of that, there's going to be that craving. And when we deprave ourselves of that craving, it's not going to lead to anything good, to where when we don't have that relationship with our Creator, to where we don't know where our future lies, we don't know where our salvation lies, particularly for people who strive to just be moral because that's all that they need to do, whereas we as Christians recognize that we're imperfect, we're going to fail, but that's okay because of the blood that was shed on the cross for us, that yet while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, and he loves us in that way, that on the third day he rose again so that he could pay the penalty for our sins. So I would definitely be interested in talking to people about that to find out where they can find their sense of hope. And because our society is so deeply ingrained with Protestant theology and with Judeo-Christian moral ethic, I think it's difficult for anyone, particularly in our culture, to derive that entirely separately from Christianity. So I guess in short, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I know that time is winding up, but I do want to just thank you for just being really honest about that. I sort of expected that answer in many ways, but still appreciate your very good intentions to grapple with that very interesting question, particularly given the change in the religious landscape that I mentioned at the start of my question. Chris, do you want to take back the mic? Because I know we need to wind down.
Yeah, I just want to respond to McCallum, what you just said. I'm sympathetic to what you said because I find my identity in Jesus Christ. I am a Christian. And some people who are listening to this are going to go, oh crap, or oh whatever. There's one of those Christians, and be really turned off. And that's not your fault, and it's not my fault. But it is just true. What I grapple with as a Christian and as a person who really cares about our society is pluralism. And so I'm, you know, plural, not just secularism, not just, you know, turning away from God and I'm meaning secular in this way, turning away from God, embracing science. I'm not talking about that, but rather multiple ways, multiple religions, the pluralism of religions and the pluralism of, I don't know the particular C.S. Lewis that you were speaking of, but I think people can be good, have a sense of a transcendent good without believing in God. You may disagree with that, but at any rate, So anyway, let me pause and give you a chance. The question really is about pluralism. How do you, so grounded in your Christian faith, think about pluralism?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that, again, what makes Christianity so unique is that it doesn't ask what we can do for our faith, because as we all know, it's a part of the human experience that we're going to fail. We're never going to be perfect. There's always going to be those times that we mess up. And so that's where the fact that Jesus paid it all for us, as opposed to us needing to work for our salvation, I just think that that's a unique hope that Christians specifically can have that other religions, or being secular, just cannot.
Yeah. McCallum, the last thing I wanted to ask you about, and I think you've already answered this, is hope for the future. And I think you've really touched on this. You've really spoken to it. And I feel like I know that hope for you is in Christ, is in your living relationship with the living God. Is it hopeless then for everybody else?
Well, I let me think about that real quick.
Please continue to think, but I don't, this is not a hostile, you know, this is not a hostile question. It's, I hope you understand that. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but it's something that I wonder about. And so that's why I'm asking the question.
Well, absolutely. Okay. Short answer, I would argue yes, because after this, after this life, again, from coming from a Christian perspective, I would argue yes, because we recognize that on this earth that nothing here really matters as far as whatever institutions we build or whatever human success that we have. What matters at the end of the day is that we are saved by the saving grace that comes from Christ Jesus, because we have this picture of what is yet to come, because we have this hope that in this world, which is obviously broken, that there's issues that coming soon to us, that it's all going to be made whole again, that Christ is going to come and he's going to make everything right again. That is just, again, indicative of the unique hope that can only come from Christianity. The fact that while all humans, and this is coming out of mere Christianity, the fact that all humans are created, yet when we are covered by Christ, when we have been transformed by the power of his Holy Spirit, that we can take part in a relationship that is begotten of God. I think that is just so unique that there's nothing else that can provide that. And that's really the only true hope that there is.
And I would imagine if you believe that, and you do, and you love people, which I believe you do, then it makes sense, given those two things that are true, that Christ is the only hope and you love people, that then out of your love, you would aim to bring others to Christ. Is that a fair way to say?
Yeah, absolutely. The only goal in our lives in seeking after Christ would to be to spread the good news, because how can people believe in something that they have not heard, and how can they hear unless we tell them? There will be many times to where people will not necessarily want to hear what you have to say. They'll be like, oh, this is just your opinion. But no, we as Christians recognize that it's either it's true or it's not, that Jesus was either a liar, a lunatic, or he was Lord. Sorry, I'm relying pretty heavily on C.S. Lewis here, but because we recognize this, that this is our goal in life, that we need to tell each and every person that we come in contact to, that so that everybody has the opportunity to hear about the saving grace that we have, and that whenever we see our brothers and sisters stumbling, that we need to be there to speak life in a way that's not condemning, but in a way that points to a better reality, that Christ has given us the way that God has designed us to live, so that they can find fulfillment and joy living God's way.
Do you have a second for me to ask you another question?
Of course.
Do you think Christ can come to people without their knowing or naming him as such?
I think that is definitely a very interesting question, and I don't have an entire answer, but I think that the fact that there are people that have never heard the name of Christ, yet we as a church can still base a lot of our theological understanding based on what these authors have done, like Socrates or Plato or Aristotle, the fact that they had never heard of Christ, I don't think that there is anything impossible for God. that being said, they were coming to very similar conclusions that we as Christians are coming to. And it's definitely a difficult question, and I'm not going to act like I have like a total answer to that question. I think people can spend their entire lives thinking about that and not necessarily come to an answer. But I think that is where we as a church have a responsibility to evangelize and, again, to spread the good news so that people have that opportunity to hear Jesus Christ mentioned to them by name and to have an explicit gospel given to them. And
we've been talking with McCallum Fulkerson. McCallum, you have done a beautiful job, and I'm so appreciative. I'm very grateful that I had a chance to meet you, had a chance to have this conversation, and I can't even tell you how grateful I am, and what a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
If you like what you've heard today, and you like what the What in God's Name Project is doing, please consider sponsoring our work for less than $1 a week on Patreon. It's barely any money for you, but it means a lot to us, and so we thank you. And also sign up for our newsletter and stay in touch with developments on our project at whatingods.com, whatingods.